All right, and now it gives me a great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, my good friend Jesse from Samaria.
Kill it. Yeah. Jesse Alcoholic. Hi, guys. Thanks for coming out. It's nice to be here. My sobriety date is 10/15/16. Which means I have a little over 2 years, working in my third year right now. A lot of you know my story, which is nice. Some of you don't, though. It's going to be fun to dig into that. I first off want to say that I can't even get it out. So Nate spoke last month. He did a great job, honestly. Like, you carried the message, and I'm probably going to say a lot of what you said, because we work very similar programs. But Nate finished early, and everyone was surprised. Everyone was surprised in the room, except his girlfriend Kate, which was weird. Okay. I kept that joke for a whole month because Nate always digs at me when he speaks, and I'm really like, don't go into him too much, but I had to get him there. Okay. Okay. Let's go. Serious. So for me, I have a sponsor Bob F., who's in the room right here. I have a home group, which is a Thursday night men's stag in Orchid. It's at 6:30. It's a really great group. It's a podium meeting. There's a lot of great recovery in there. It's where I've learned the basics of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also have a book study that I go to once a week, which is the men's another men's stag called the Mad Men Group. It's here, 7:00. For me, those are the basics that I have to stay in those meetings, once a week. I don't always get to hit them, life does happen, but those are my staples. I want to start off by talking about everything that brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place. I started drinking, and when I was 13, for me, it wasn't surprising to me that alcohol did what it did for me. I really struggled. I always just remembered struggling. I don't know if that's common. I can't talk for normies or what that's like. I just know that I hear that's a common thread through all of us is that we just had a hard time. I had a hard time. But when I got to drink, it really had an impact on me that I could tell right off the bat wasn't the same impact it had on people. Other people that were drinking with me, and we were kids, but I was the one who wanted to, as soon as I drank, I wanted to get drunk, and I wanted to be really drunk, and people didn't follow me there a lot of the times, and as I grew up, I was, 14, 15, I just, every opportunity I could get to drink, I did, and I really took it to the extreme. I loved just getting super, super drunk, and for me, it was, so what I would do is I would steal alcohol from my parents. They would, they have a liquor cabinet. So anytime that I had my friends over, anytime that I felt like I could, I would pour them all into like a water bottle and go ahead and drink that. And my friends loved that too. And that was kind of hard to keep up because eventually what happens is you start filling up with water all the bottles that you keep drinking from, right? And I was already like an alcoholic, the way I was, because I knew that the consequence was going to be that it was just going to end up being water in those bottles, and that, my parents would eventually find out. And that's what happened. They had friends over for a big party, and I remember them talking to me the next day, and I'm like, hey, so there's water in our liquor bottles, you know. She's like, we poured drinks for our friends, and it was pretty embarrassing. What do you have to say about that? And I was just like, my friends, I'm telling you right now, I have some bad friends. I'm not going to hang out with them anymore. Those friends that are coming over, yeah, they've been taking liquor. And I don't want friends like that, you know. They're like, okay, good, you know. We just didn't know if it was you. And I'm like, no, I would. Why would I, you know? So from the get-go, lying about my drinking. I would say that it was pretty normal for... It wasn't like anything was out of the ordinary. I thought it was a normal thing, right? Everyone just thought, when I was in high school, and I would continue to get drunk and get, you know, hammered, it's typical. I surrounded myself with friends that drank like me. So if you were like that guy who stayed up super late because you're trying to like drink all the booze, like me and you were friends, we're homies, like that's cool. Like, yeah, everyone else is, you know, weak. Let's get, you know, we know how to party. And that's just the way it went for me. Still super, I could say this is looking back and absolutely just from doing the step work that I really on the inside was just very insecure. I didn't know how to operate. I really felt on the outside of everything that was going on around me. I just felt like I was like, what, like I didn't know how to behave in order to be a part of it. You know, like I remember like stupid things like getting invited to a friend's house who was pretty cool, and he was part of, you know, I played sports, but he was like the guy that everyone wanted to hang out with. And I went over there, and there was no drinks or anything like that because it was like an event for our school. And I just was like, I hated it. I just like, I don't know how to be. And I remember people calling me out on that and like, what's wrong with you, man? I didn't, cause I couldn't be a part of it. So, I quickly found out how to pregame. I'd get drunk before I show up to parties, which was nice, right? And I was like very serious about that. I was not gonna show up to a party sober. And if I did, I made sure to try to drink as fast as I could so I got a buzz going, because it's just the social thing, just, I didn't like it. Drugs are part of my story. It really is, and I don't mean that to offend AA. And I heard a speaker say this once, and I think it's funny, that it's not an outside issue if it can change my sobriety date. That's true. My sobriety date that you see here, 10, 15, 16, was because of painkillers. That's what brought, you know, I didn't have a drink. I had about almost, I had almost a year, it was coming up on a year. And this was the last time I drank alcohol was 11, 13, 15. So it did change my sobriety date. I had a really bad pill addiction. I had a big surgery in high school. That was introduced to painkillers. When you add that to the way that I drink, your blackouts become very, very different. And it talks about it in the big book about sedatives with alcohol and how that scent Bill towards the edge, right, quicker. That was the same thing for me. Being young and Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I don't know that I'd be here without drugs, because it really did push it to a limit. It pushed it to a place where it just got really bad really fast. And, I did everything I could. It took me to harder drugs. Drinking then became something where I would black out. This was the scary part of alcoholism for me. Where it took me was that it was like Russian roulette. You know, I drink sometimes and it worked. So I'd be like, good time, right? Then a bad time mixed in there. I did something horrible, right? And I don't know what I did, but I pissed off a bunch of people. Oh, crap. Okay, that was a bad one. And it was like good time, bad time again. Then it started being more good time, bad time. I was like, oh, shoot. There's consequences stacking up. And then it became bad, good. And then I'd hang on to that good one, and I'd be like, oh, shoot, still does work, because look how good, you know, look how fun this is. We look how good of a time we had. It all worked out. And then I became delusional because it started just being mostly bad. That's when alcohol stopped working for me. So I would start drinking, and it felt like I had to. And then I'd get on some drugs or whatever, I'd black out. I'd be scared, because then I'd wake up and it'd be something very, very bad going on. It was almost like I was sabotaging my life. I always kind of joked around about it, but it was almost like I'd black out and this thing would take over me, like this anti-me who wanted to just like sabotage whatever it is that what was going on in my life. Like really, really would like be creative about it too. It was like, I remember the most expensive thing that I owned at the time, I would like trash it. I'd break it. Like I remember we bought this $1,100 like new flat screen 3D TV, and my girlfriend, you know, like was very stoked about it. And the next time I blackout drunk, I tackled the TV like at like 3 a.m. or something like that and completely break it in the middle. And we get new couches, and I go ahead and I pee on the new couches in a blackout, you know, like, you know, all over. Like, that's the kind of stuff that started happening. So long story short, because I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I just wanted to explain some of the insanity of it so that the new person could relate. But I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a second DUI. So I was court card, introduced, nudge from the judge, came in here. I really was not convinced that I was an alcoholic. It's weird, the delusion of that, where you, and I think it's honestly like the knowledge, like I can't absorb it yet. Like I'm too blocked off. I still believe I still got some stuff left I can do, tricks up my sleeve. I have plans. I'm still young. Even though I can't keep a job, I keep falling apart. I keep scaring the crap out of my family and people around me. I still don't think I have a problem. I'm just like, oh, I have to be here. And I was the punk. I was like the punk who like would share about like philosophy or something and like explain how like Alcoholics Anonymous really was like, it was cute. Like, like, oh, I get what you guys are doing here. And it was just so, like, looking back on it, it's pretty offensive. Like, I would be and old timers and people with time just were like so kind to me, but there was like a little bit of like, you're kind of an idiot, but it's all good, you know, I love you. And like, you know, because I would really like say things that just contradicted what people said. This was going on in San Francisco. I was introduced to AA partially here, because I was living here partially, but then I moved to San Francisco at some point. So I was going to meetings, and I had to do, I think 120 meetings was the court thing, and that was a lot. It's like, it was like 160 days, I had to do 120 meetings. So it was like, and I was just like super pissed about that. I just was like, so I would go, I was living with a girlfriend at the time who wouldn't allow me to skimp on it too and like do my own writing, like, because she would like report me and I'd lose my living situation. Like, so I actually had to go, you know. You know what's crazy is I don't even remember what I heard the whole first, like, I don't know. It was like a blur to me for like the first year, 2 years. I didn't stay sober. But I just don't remember hearing the message. Like, I just remember like blips of like people saying something. I'm like, oh, that was pretty cool. Or that's pretty cool. And then I'm gone. I'd just be out of the meeting after the meeting. As soon as it over, I was gone. I remember a girl with time. She was doing what we do. And she just talked to me after. And she goes, I relate so much to you. I know what's going on. And I'm like, this is how oblivious I am. I'm like, thank you. You know, like, that's cool. And she goes, you know what? You need to get plugged in. You know, she's like, you know, get someone's number. You know, you can have my number. If you ever need to call someone, just call me. And I was like, this chick's hitting on me. She's hitting on me in AA, you know, and I'm trying to get sober. God, man. I was like, is that what these people do? You know, and like, that's so stupid. Like, you know, like delusional. I'll never forget an actual guy who was serious about the program, though. finally actually reached out to me and said, hey, I want you to know something that you're sick, and I'll never forget it. And he was like not too much older than me, but he was like someone who was involved. He was someone who just was carrying the message. It was plain to him, but to me, I was like, I didn't know what he was doing. But he finally like pulled me aside, and he told me, he said, hey, I want you to know that he had a bulldog with him, which was weird. He always walked around with him. But he said, I want you to know you're sick, man. Do you know you're sick? I was like, I don't know what you mean by that, but I definitely know my life's not good. And he goes, okay, you're sick. I'll just tell you. He goes, and I was like offended, obviously. And but then he told me this. He goes, you should probably do a 90-90. You know what a 90-90 is? And I was like, no. And he goes, yeah, you go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I explained to him, you know, I already have a court card. I have to go, you know. And he's like, yeah, I know, but you're not going to survive if you continue doing what you're doing. Like 90-90, get a sponsor and start working the steps. Get a home group, reach out to people. You're not plugged in, you're sick. And I was, that stuck with me. It really stuck with me. It's weird how those conversations that you think are not significant, they just are. It's like a seed planted in your head, and it just over time just grows, you know, because I was not ready for that message, because I did not take action on it. But I took action on it later because I remembered. And so I just think that's really important too for me. I sometimes get the eye roll from newcomers when I ask them or tell them something similar, you know, but that's not the point. The point is that we carry the message whether they're ready for it or not, because like me, I just wish that guy could have seen that it actually worked at some point. You know what I mean? That would be cool. But for me, it wasn't my time. It took me another few years, 6 years actually. So I came in and out of the rooms for 6 years. I've thought about my story. I think this might be the most important part for anyone who's struggled with this, because I have good experience when it comes to going in and out. I know all the ways that it doesn't work because I tried them. I was very creative. I considered myself too smart for the program. So what I did was I would take what you told me and I'd find a way to turn it into my thing and then do that. And when it didn't work, I'd blame it on the program or blame it on someone else, come back, try it a little differently, didn't work, over and over again. And this is where it became suicidal for me, because I just got so sick of... First off, AA ruins your drinking, because that's real for me. Because once I identified, the moment I identified, I couldn't go back to my old behavior. I'd be doing it, but it'd be like this. It'd be like you guys were in the room in my head or something, like watching. Like I could watch myself doing it. You know, and you're like, oh my God. I remember just one story just really illustrates this. I remember thinking, delusionally, you get back to, I can drink again, I can do all this shit again. I was just young, it was a bad time or whatever. You're drinking, you know, and I'm drinking and I'm partying, but it's a party, it's fun. But I stole this big Magnum bottle, wine bottle, from this person's house. We got kicked out of their jacuzzi, and you know, I'm like, I am naked, and I run in the house, and I grab this bottle because I see a bottle, and of course I'm an alcoholic. I take it, and I run out, and my friend picks me up, and it's all fun, and you know, it's funny, and oh, it's so cool. But we come back to the house, you know, and everyone's just like super done, like wow, that was wild, and we're all kind of drunk, and I stay up all night drinking what's left of the beer, and then in the morning, I know I have to work later that day, so I'm like, dude, the phenomenon of cravings kicked in. I can't stop the party. Like I need to get drunk. I don't know why I'm thinking that, but throughout the day, so that way I go into work, I'm like drunk as opposed to being hungover. So I hit the bottle in the bathroom in the shower. So I went in there. I knew I had it in the morning, and I pulled it out. And I don't have a wine opener or anything like that. I just have this pocket knife, and so I do what I can to get the thing off with the pocket knife, and then I want to get in there, so I use it as like a I start stabbing the cork, you know, and it makes enough of a hole, but it's not the full thing, and the cork is in the bottle, so it's nasty, like it's all, and it's warm. And it's in there, and it's just, and it's not coming out fully because it's just like it's got a little thing. But I stand there, really nasty drunk, you know. I just don't feel good, and like, hey, I got drugs in my system, and I'm just doing this. I'm like, and it takes forever to go down. I honestly think it took me an hour to get through the bottle, and I'm in there, and I'm in the bathroom, and I'm looking at myself, and then I see myself in the mirror doing this. And it just, it all sinks in. Oh my God, dude. This is the phenomenon of craving. You cannot stop. You have an allergy. This is not normal, dude. This is, you're an alcoholic. And I looked in the mirror and I go, oh my God. Well, I got to finish this, but dude, that's crazy. And I'm like, you know. So that's what I mean by it ruined my drinking. I just couldn't, with the knowledge you guys gave me, I couldn't go back and think that I was living a normal life or think that I was just having a good time. I was dying. I'm going to die soon from this disease because I black out and I don't know where I end up. I trash cars. I total 2 cars. Suicide attempts happen sometimes in blackouts. Scary stuff. Fights, you know. So every time I went back out, I came back just a little more serious about my recovery and a little more willing. There was a willingness there, just a little more. And every time I came back and had a little more willingness, I just did like some extra, just a little extra. And like, that doesn't sound too like spiritual or spectacular, but that's what it was. It was a slow, painful process. It took 6 years of saying, okay, I don't have it figured out. I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, I'll actually listen to my sponsor when he asks me to do the writing. Okay, I'll start doing that. I took that serious. Okay, I'll actually get the commitments. Okay, I'll do that. Oh, I'll actually reach out to newcomers. I'll start doing that. I don't know when it clicked. All I know for me is that I hit a point where I just said, whatever it takes, I'll do it. And I said this at the 12 o'clock today, and I didn't really realize what I said, and then I thought about it, and I was like, wow, that's kind of what happened in my head, is that there wasn't this, I didn't come to the rooms and go, okay, I'm willing to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, just, you know, and like, you know what the plan is, I know what you're going to tell me, it's like, whatever, that wasn't the thought process, it literally was just this, I came in, and I was like, done. And I was done. And I came in and I remember just being like, whatever. I don't care. When that happened, that's when the magic happened. Because I really believe that when we make that decision, first I think for me to even get there, I already did a 1, 2, 3, right? And I'm at the third step and I'm actually literally saying, I turn it over. Like this program, you know, via God, I believe really does. There's something magical that happens, and I think that's what happened for me, is that when someone new comes in and says, whatever it takes, it's almost like all these things just like fall into place, and the right people, the right time, the right meetings, the right commitments, all of it just starts coming together, and you keep saying yes to Alcoholics Anonymous, and then it starts taking you. It's like, that's what happened to me. I have no doubt about that. It just seemed to be like that. I showed up to the meetings. When a commitment came up, I took it. Pretty simple. When someone said something I liked, I asked them to sponsor me. I took his suggestions when he told me to do things. I did one step at a time, one reading at a time, one writing assignment at a time. That's really how simple it was, and it kept me sober. It was crazy. There was a lot of things that happened in my first year, my first 2 years. There's a lot of stuff happening now. So I'm acting like it slowed down or something. It hasn't. But I'm in a totally different position than when I came in here. I really wasn't doing good. I was really looking bad too. I was maybe about 145 pounds maybe. I didn't look right. I was seeing shadow people. You know, anyone know what that is? Yeah, seeing shadow people, and I just wasn't okay. I look around, I like tripping out, couldn't look you in the eyes. I'd look at your forehead, really. I'd cry when I share. I couldn't say anything my first 30 days. Yeah. And then for me, I have to say that what it did for me to get to that place was beautiful, because I had the gift of desperation. I worked the steps as if my life depended on it, because it did, really did. I had a great sponsor. Cody was my first sponsor when I came in here. A lot of you remember him. And he only had, I love this, I love to share this, he only had 9 months of recovery at the time. But it didn't matter, because he was carrying the message. He was up service. He was doing all the work. He was a parrot. He had nothing original to say. He just repeated everything that was coming from the old timers and from other people. But it worked. And I was drawn towards his like ability to just like, just do it. Like, screw it. I'm doing it. This is what we do. Like, you know? And I still admire that about him. But he would put me in really uncomfortable positions. Like he would I'd be like, oh, I'm having a hard day. And then like the meeting would be over and I'm talking to him and he'd go, you are? Come here. And he'd like pull me. And totally picture him doing this. And he would like, there'd be someone who's new and he goes, he'd be like, hey Joe. And he's like, this is Jesse. Tell him what you're telling me. I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, I'm Jesse. He goes, okay, talk to him. I'm gone. Like, he would like make me do stuff like that, you know. And I would talk to someone who had less time than me or someone who was struggling. And he would ask me to work the steps. He didn't know what he was doing. I love that. He didn't know what he was doing. He had a working knowledge of the steps. That was it. As far as he, but it, that's it. That's what it is. It's one alcoholic working with another. He wasn't my counselor, you know. He wasn't my psychologist. He wasn't my guru, you know. He was pretty sick. Like, he was struggling. Like, looking back now, like, Cody was struggling. And but he was doing his best when he was with me, because I was struggling more than him. So he would focus on me. That was so fun to reflect on. It really is. He'd meet me for coffee, you know, and yeah, I don't know why that makes me emotional. It's just those are good times. Those are good times to reflect on the men who took the time, because he was busy. Oh man, like Cody, you remember, he's a go-getter. He's at Berkeley right now. You know what I mean? He's a go-getter, so he's just busy. He had a family he was just starting out with, you know. His wife was pregnant. He was going back to Hancock full time. But he worked me into his schedule, and he answered the phone when I'd call him late at night. I'd call him at 1 in the morning, some 2 in the morning, because my life's falling apart, and I want to kill my ex, and, you know, the normal stuff, you know. And it's just beautiful, because not only was that a service to me, it's a service to the next guy that I get to work with, because that example is ingrained in me. I got, you know, I'm not sponsoring anyone right now, but I've got to sponsor a handful of guys so far. And, I get it. I get why it worked for Cody, why he was doing so well. I think I was helping him more than he was helping me. Because I know that only now, because when I sponsor dudes, I get that. I love sponsoring dudes. Because you get to see their life change. And you're like, it's like a front row ticket, you know, you're just like right in the front, and, you know, and when this program works, which it does when we work it, I've never seen it not. I've never seen someone do all the work and go, yeah, shit doesn't work. You know, it's pretty cool. Like they get stoked, just like all of us get stoked when their life starts changing. And Cody got to do that with me. And, you know, I was a little, you know, See, I almost cussed. I wasn't too, I was pretty turbulent, so I didn't keep him as a sponsor. I did that for a little while as part of my story too. I want to be honest about that, is that I always think that the next sponsor is the golden ticket. So I did that for my first few years. There's no such thing as a perfect sponsor. There's no such thing as a perfect alcoholic. We're all alcoholics. Stop putting people on pedestals. I started just to trust that it was God appointed, and that's what I've come to believe, is that it's not random when you work with someone. I've seen that also through my own experience, that when I work with a guy that I think it's random, oh, it's because I met you and I went to this meeting and you went to this meeting and we've had this conversation or whatever and you're going through this, and I don't think that anymore, because I've had too many God shots during sponsorship to know, oh, there's something, someone's orchestrating this, because this is pretty crazy that when you shared your fifth with me, you thought no one else had that experience, but I did. And that's when I go, wow, I'm an instrument right now. That's pretty cool. My story is no longer this dark thing that just like hangs over me. It's useful today. It's my greatest asset in Alcoholics Anonymous. All the details of my past and all the pain, like all the stuff that I thought was just like, I'm going to, oh man, I can't live my life because I have this. God turned that into a treasure, which is crazy. I get to help another guy who swore that he was not going to talk about that with anyone, and I can look at him and go, yeah, me too, man, you're good. You know, that's happened more than a few times, and I love that. So for me, that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous too. I love that we don't just get sober here, and that's what it's about, and that we're physically sober. It's the primary purpose of this, right? But what happens is that as a result of doing all of this, our life not only improves, but we get rocketed into that fourth dimension. It's an incredible spiritual journey, like this spiritual roller coaster that just totally screws with you at times and totally like upheavals everything. And then at times it's wonderful and you're like, oh my God, it's amazing. I'm grateful today, you know, and then at different times you feel like you're a part of something way bigger than you. Like, I just love that. I participate in that. My life has become so much bigger than my little plan and design that I had, you know. It's become this big thing that includes everyone. And that's what I love about what we get to do here, is it's like we, you know, we turn in that crazy life and all of a sudden this is what we're left with. It's funny too that I also have to, now I'm getting a little more real now. I want to talk about what's going on with my personal life today. In a general way, I'm not going to dig into a lot of the stuff that I want to, but I'll keep it general. There's a lot of family turbulence right now, so much upheaval, so much change. The thing that's beautiful about the whole thing is that I'm not scared like I used to be when things get like this, when everything kind of gets shaken up. The reason being is that I know that if this stays central in my life, this is the centerpiece, everything's going to be fine. I have to keep trying my best and showing up, doing my best. And what happens is it works out, because I've asked other alcoholics who've walked through similar stuff, and they tell me, look me dead in the eye, it's going to be okay. And so that's what I love too, is that I don't have that fear like my world's going to end, because it's not. I thought that what happened was, and this is kind of me breaking down my facade, and I'm going to get honest right here instead of talking about just like the typical stuff we talk about. You know, I told you I'm about 2.5 years sober, and I've tried to do my best to be one of those, be like a Cody. I'll be honest, one of those guys who did all the stuff that we do, and there's a dark side to that for me, because what happens is that I can turn that into my ego, which means it becomes a facade, which means that, hey, I'm so on fire, I do all the stuff that we do, I'm one of those guys. Yeah, I'm one of the good guys. I do all this stuff, you know, and I'm gonna, you know, I sponsor dudes, and you know, I have some commitments and all that, and you know, I got the family, and I have the, you know, I have the beautiful wife, I have the kid. Those are all beautiful things. They really are. But what happens is for me, is I can hide behind that, and make you think that that's who I am now. And that there's nothing really going on, if there's something going on the inside that's happening, right? And there's been something that's been going on the inside for a while that I've not addressed, and I'm addressing it now. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but just different levels of honesty. I talked about this again at the Nooner. I think I'm being honest, and I'm trying my best, but I don't know. Sometimes there's something in my blind spot that I ignore, or I don't want to look at, and God works through life, and life starts showing me things, and things start happening, and all of a sudden that blind spot is in my face, and I have to face it. So I didn't want to. So I'm not doing good right now. I'm struggling. I'm really struggling. My emotional world is like pretty all over the place right now. It's pretty hard right now. I feel like a newcomer again. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because, one, I don't think it's bad to be like a newcomer. Like, it's so condescending that we like say that, you know, it's like, I don't want to be like a newcomer. It's like, it just means I'm growing up again. I have to go through the whole process again of getting honest, dropping the facade, and getting back to the basics, and saying, I'm a little lost, and I have to start over again. And it's okay. I know there's growth on the other side of it. I know that there's always something good on the other side of pain if the right intentions are there, and if my heart's pure about it, right? So I got to make sure my heart's pure, that I'm staying close to my sponsor, that I'm not turning my back on my inner circle, that I'm being honest with my inner circle, right? Even though that's super uncomfortable because I really respect my inner circle and I don't want them to think any less of me, but I have to straight up be me right now. And it's difficult. It really is. So I'm hungry for newcomers too right now. I want someone who's doing worse than I am right now so I could focus on their life. It's okay to admit, right? You know, so I do have to say what I'm doing today to stay sober is I'm staying close, as close as I can. I'm back to a meeting a day, okay? And I'm back to reading the same old stuff I read in my first few years, right? The same stuff. Me and Bob were just talking about it. 62, 63, right? Bob wants me to do 60, 61, 62, 63. I will. And for me, I'm just throwing this out there. I always have read 86 to 87 because it's about On Awakening, tells us what we should be doing, what I should read. And then Closing at the Night, I read the When We Retire at Night. And when I'm really not doing too well, I do a Leo. And what Leo does is he reads from 84 through 88. And I'm in that place again. I'm reading a little more in the morning, and a little more at night than I'm used to. My prayer life, I'm talking about prayer for a minute, because I think that was a theme at the Lion's Den. And I never really realized until recently, in my last year, I would say, the power of prayer and how powerful that is. I don't know it. I don't understand it. And that's just like I don't understand a lot of why Alcoholics Anonymous works and keeps us sober and improves our lives. I don't get it. I don't understand prayer, really. I don't. I just know that when I do it, I feel better. Things go better. I have a little more serenity. I believe that there's some power in dropping to your knees. I do. I think it's a physical representation of my submission. So I'm on my knees a lot right now. I sometimes just get on my knees and I don't even have thoughts. I'm just in that position and I just stay there for like long periods of time, because right now I don't know what else to do. That sometimes is a prayer for me. And then I sometimes don't even know what to say to him. You know, I just say help. Like right now, like I don't even know how to explain myself or anything like that to him, or I just say help. That's my prayer life right now. I want to talk quickly about the fellowship and how wonderful it is for me right now that I have such a great fellowship. You know that we have a disease of perception, right? You've heard that. I used to think I can't ever get sober in my hometown because Santa Maria AA is really small and it's not that good. Like it's so funny. Like I honestly would be like, I come from San Francisco where like it's done, you know, the serious way or whatever. And then I came here and I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, like there's no young people, you know, there's not enough old timers or whatever. Like, I think you guys have always been here and just like totally oblivious. But it's amazing once I shifted and actually worked the steps and got a little bit of sanity, a little bit. It's like my world changed and I saw everything. I'm like, oh wow. Now my fellowship today, I just like can't imagine a better fellowship. I'm not kidding. I cannot imagine that a guy gets luckier than me when it comes to the people that are in these rooms. I'm serious. My men's stag, man, I think that's the best meeting like around, period. Just like the men in the room, I just have to call out, you know, Lee, Fallen told me, you know, my first commitment, you know, cause I didn't know what to do, you know, and thank God for guys like that. Just go like, hey, you're the timer. Oh, okay. Glenn let me live with him. You know, I lived with him my first year, which was a turbulent time for me. And there's times we had meetings, you know, in his living room just because we were both going through it, you know. My best friend Nate here in the program is sometimes our relationship is the reason what keeps me going. That's amazing to me. And it's when I'm not doing good like I am right now that I appreciate fellowship more than ever. And I love it. And I love that I get to look around the room and know that each one of you have had an impact on my recovery. And my life is owed to you. And I'm going to need you more right now than I've needed you in the past, you know. And I'm not afraid. I love that. I'm not afraid because I trust this process more than I trust myself. I trust this more than anything else. And it doesn't fail you. It's not going to fail me if I put in the work. It works if we work it. As simple as that. So, I love what we get to do. Just want to point out one last thing that, if you're new, and this sounds like it just sounds weird, because that's how what it, that, that's the basically the way I could relate it to you. When I was new, it just sounded weird. It's like, why do we do all this stuff and you're telling me that this works? I just pray that you get to a place where you don't have to explain it to yourself why you're going to do it, or come up with reasons or understand the why. That's not the point. I heard once that Alcoholics Anonymous is not for people who want it. It's not for people who need it. It's for people who do it. It's an action program. I don't care what you think about this. Just take the action. Do the next thing that's in front of you. It's that simple. If it's staying after to put away the chairs, if it's picking up the coffee commitment, if it's talking to the guy that you have a hunch that you've probably talked to him, just do that. And do that over and over again. Leo says trust the tug, you know. Just trust that. Keep doing that over and over again. It's worked for me. It's worked for everyone else. Nobody's special here. What I mean by that is I used to think that, you know, I'm the way that I am. I don't think it's going to work like it does for you. That's honestly BS. It does. It works for us. It's going to work for you. I say that more for myself right now than I do for you probably, because I need to trust the tug. I'm in the basics right now, so I'm right in the same boat as you. I'm just going to keep taking it one action at a time. Right now, 1 hour at a time in my case. Left foot, right foot, breathe. And it's going to be okay. Lean into the pain. That's where I'm at. All right, and that's all I got. Thank you for having me. Thank you for being with me. Yeah.
All right, Daniel Alcoholic. Just want to say, Jesse was the first person in here in Santa Maria when I moved here that made me feel part of in this entire town, so thank you for that, and I appreciate your friendship. Let's have another round of applause for Jesse.